Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast. I'm Kudri Bentham-Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. This episode is a dedicated show to the recently held Africa Youth in Tourism and Innovation Summit in Accra, Ghana. My guest, Akwesi Obinaje, a seasoned financial management executive based in South Africa, who also participated at the event as a jurist and a panelist, has been sharing his experience of the conference and advises startups to incorporate the principles of financial sustainability in their models.
Akwesi, good afternoon and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Kojo.
Okay. How are things in South Africa?
Besides the weather, we're still trying to just keep our heads up.
Ah, super.
amid the political issues that we're currently facing, things are okay. Generally, things are okay.
Okay, excellent. Now, this special podcast is the Youth in Tourism Cafe in the conversation. So you're one of you were one of the jurists, right? And one of the jurists, and again, you were also a panelist, and you spoke on a number of issues. Let me start with your impressions of the event that happened in Ghana last week.
Okay, so I think for my perspective, the Africa Youth Tourism in Innovation Challenge, which was held in Accra, was quite a gateway into opening up avenues for the youth to conversate. I think for many years, the tourism industry has been sidelined and has not been a very non-core sector from a GDP contribution perspective. But I think we have seen a different perspective to that industry in the past couple of years. And such a forum gives rise to conversations with the right crowd, if I could put it that way, to start putting this conversation forward. And if we look at statistics, if 75% of the workforce in the next 5 to 10 years would be the youth, would be the people in the age group of 30 to 49, we need to start bringing them closer together to have meaningful conversations in a bid to transform the tourism, travel, and hospitality industry. And I think this forum and this conference that just took place in Accra aimed to achieve that. And in my opinion, it did substantially achieve that objective.
Okay. Now we'll come to the sessions, but if you look at the response from the participant, i.e., you know, the virtual participants and the ones on the ground in person, do you think that they quite got the grasp of what yourself and other colleagues wanted to, espouse on the day or during the days?
I think, yeah, to a large extent, yes. And I judge this from basically looking at the type of after-event confrontations you do get or consultation that these young people come up to you and they really do show appreciation for the kind of insight that we brought into the forum. And if we also look at the numbers from the day one when we started, the numbers were a bit lower. But as the conference went on, the target actually got exceeded from about 1,000 to about 1,300, which was more than what the conference had aimed to register. So the active participation of the youth from day one right through to the last of the event, and the consistency in terms of attendance and participation, is a true testimony to the value that they saw in the conference. Usually you see that if there's a dwindling number of participants as the days unfold, it gives a different picture, but they were consistently involved. They participated, they asked questions. They were really keen to speak to us off the cuff type of conversation, and it demonstrates that the youth were quite engaged. They are very eager and hungry for success, and they want to turn their lives around, and they want to have a meaningful impact and contribution to the tourism, travel, and hospitality industry. And it was quite evident in not just the presentations we gave, but the responses that they gave to myself and to the other panelists after the event was over.
Okay. Now, for those who missed your session or even missed the event, you spoke about the career or the prospect in tourism and travel and tourism hospitality. Give a gist of what you said and what you think that is or are some of the things that we tend not to put the spotlight on, because people are looking at tourism sometimes from a myopic point of view and looking at just, for example, looking at just being there, the hotel or traveling or something. Give us a bit of what you shared with the audience.
So I think from the presentation, the key takeout for me was that the advent of the mega trends, and I spoke about three mega trends that is going to tremendously transform the lives of all industries, including both the travel, hospitality, and tourism industry. And I mentioned those three trends, and the first one was technology. And I took the teams through what the advent of technology is going to shape how the tourism and travel and hospitality industry will look like in the near future. I also spoke about globalization, and I spoke about demographic changes. In terms of their career aspirations, I think the key takeout for me was that as they build their businesses, as they build their careers, as they build that little entrepreneurial venture, as they look into tapping into the benefits or the value that tourism does bring, particularly given that we're in the midst of COVID, they have to really look at building a business model that is agile, that is scalable, and that is adaptable to different varying conditions. So I ended the presentation with a scenario around, or a metaphor around, the bridge Choluteca, a bridge that was formed many years ago to withstand winds and hurricanes and storms in Honduras. And when the situation changed course, the bridge was there, but the bridge served no purpose. Right, so my key message to the youth was that as they build their careers, as they build their businesses, as they tap into entrepreneurial ventures, the key takeout was for them to build not to last, but they should build for adaptability. Because you would find out that sometimes you build the best formidable solution, but the problem can change, and you've got a solution to a problem that doesn't work anymore. And I think another key takeout for me from the session was for the youth of Africa in general to start building businesses that is premised on what they envisage business to be, but it's to think of the customer as an end product and design solutions and design tourism adventures that bring an experience to somebody that visits their shores or somebody that consumes their product. And I think the last point that I wanted to make for the youth was around the time it takes to start up a business, that we need to be very quick, we need to be very agile, and that you need to be able to produce a quick solution. And as I always said, you need to get the minimum viable product, which is called an MVP out there, with the minimum features out into the market, and test the market and revise or review your product as you go along. Because you don't want to take too long to build a solution into your market. And at a time when your fully fledged solution is in the market, it's actually obsolete, or the market has changed, or the customer appreciation of what you're trying to give them is no longer valid. So it was more around being agile and being adaptable to the varying conditions and changes that these three megatrends are bringing to the shores of business. As far as even our lives are concerned, these megatrends are transforming our lives as rapidly as we can imagine.
I think the point you made about adaptability, or building to adapt and building to last, was very profound, because everyone was talking about it. But I know you have a background in finance and auditing and all of that. Aside the presentation on the day, what advice can you give people, especially for startup, of a young startup, who are not taking into consideration things like that in terms of management, financial discipline, to be able to start their business? Because we heard other testimonies on the day, which meant that obviously sometimes you start, it will take you, you know, a longer time to be able to get it right. But at the same time, if people are having a sneak peek or having a privilege of information as to how to get it right or how to at least to begin the process, it saves them the issue of having to be back and forth with it. What will be your, you know, snap advice on you know, financial management, prudence, and how to keep your books right?
Yeah, so from a financial management perspective, I think what most young people do not consider at the initiation or the inception stage of a business is to consider the funding model. And we had a few presentations during the seminar where a couple of young people were presenting the innovation challenge. And you could see the porosity of their financial model, that they had not really thought about where they're going to get money from, when they're going to get the money, and how they're going to pay back the money to their potential investors and stakeholders. So a very fundamental message from a financing point of view is not just to think of the business model, but as you think of the business model, equally you have to think of how am I going to finance my business. And people were not also aware of the funding options. I think most people had forgone the options of the venture capitalist approach. Most people were not aware of the private equity type setup or the possibility of getting funding from the banking sector. And I know the banks are very quiet, not laxed when it comes to funding programs and projects that are very futuristic, that doesn't have any tangible returns on paper. So when you put together this business plan, when you put together your entrepreneurial venture activity, make sure they put a very solid business plan that projects what your financials are going to look like and why a bank who is equally an investor should give money to you to be able to transition from being a startup into an operationally sound business. At the end of the day, nobody throws money into a business that cannot see tangible returns. And it's quite important that the starting up of a business has to take into account the key consideration of what the financial modeling approach will look like. So you have to really think of how am I going to get money, where am I going to get it from, and how am I going to pay back, and what is the real value to the potential investor or the stakeholder that I intend to obtain these funds from. And you have to drive that value through their eyes for them to be able to see any potential possibility of investing in your business. And I think most of the pitches that I saw that they lacked that value, that they had not considered the financial implications. Most people didn't even talk about the break-even point. When am I going to start being profitable? After how many years will I be able to substantially be on my own and start generating profit for my business? And I think that's a quite important concept, that it's good to want to be an entrepreneur. It's good to want to be a business owner. But if you don't demonstrate to your shareholder how they're going to get their money back, it's quite difficult to get anybody to plug money into something that they don't foresee tangible returns. At the end of the day, it's returns on investment. And if you don't showcase that to any potential investor, you're not going to get the money from them. And I think that is what the youth needs to focus on, that as they build their career, as they build that model, as they generate that passion, they need to consider the financial modeling component of starting up a business.
Okay, I think that's very important, the point you've just made. But also the area of, if you like, partnership, where it came up very strongly, that sometimes people like to partner to scale up. But you've seen that in Africa, it's become sometimes a challenge where partnership necessarily hasn't worked, you know. And for people who have these ideas that you saw, some of them that you saw, you know, during the summit, as a society, do we allow them to just go like that? Or we have to build a kind of a hub or a hackathon system where people can be able to tap into, even if it means that you have to be able to pay for that intellectual capacity of the people who will be able to do that. Because we have people who can put out the ideas, but it lack, if you like, polishing or fine tuning, or it lack invested. Can we have a system where, for example, you have a hub of ideas, and then you again also have market access or access to investors who can convert this into opportunities and in turn make it a scalable or a workable idea, especially in sub-Saharan Africa?
That's a very important comment, Kojo, and it's one that perhaps was echoed by the minister during the conference. And the minister made a commitment to wanting to train 30,000 plus entrepreneurs over the next couple of years. That was one side of the commitment. But as a general rule, most partnerships in Africa is construed to mean that you need money. And I think that notion needs to dissipate from the minds of any young boy or young girl, or for anybody for that matter, starting a business, to infer that when I need a partner, the partner needs to bring in the financial gains for me to be able to consider them as a partner. We need to now define the scope of partnership. So you have to think of partnership as somebody who is willing to donate their intellectual capacity in the form of mentoring to a business. Somebody who is willing to rent an office space for you to go in there to propagate your business model. Somebody who is willing to give you transport to execute aspects of your business. It could be in many other forms, aside the physical exchange of money. And those things may, in most instances, do not have a payback because it's being seen as gratuity or contributions towards a very passionate young individual who wants to start a business. So we need to really get the youth to redefine the concept of partnership. What does it mean when somebody wants to partner with you? What is the expectation from you as being the business owner and the person that you're partnering with? What do you need from them? But in most instances, you find young people or business people coming to people to look for finances when they think of partnerships. And if you define the scope of partnership to be a little bit more broader, we would achieve a lot more greater gain than just money. We spoke about crowdfunding a lot during the session, and crowdfunding usually requires small amounts of contribution from many people into a pool that makes up what this person needs to be. You could get partnerships through contributions, through donations, and through other forms of financial gateway that people don't consider. And the youth needs to really start looking beyond partnership as being a financial agreement where somebody has to have a stake in your company for them to become an influential component of what the company is intending to achieve. So that misdemeanor needs to be demystified for us to be able to move forward to get our youth to benefit from the true sense of the word partnerships. And I think for now it's a myopic concept that partnership means money, and that needs to be demystified for them to start benefiting from the real true definition of what partnerships mean. I don't think we've defined it properly for the youth, and I don't think we've gotten that concept right at this point in time.
Okay, Akwesi, as we wrap up our conversation, one area I'd like to also touch on is that obviously we are coming out of the pandemic, or we are still living in the pandemic. People have to survive. Business has to go, grow. And in adversity, they say come invention. What would be your advice for young people, especially who are looking at tourism, to start something? Is it all, doom and gloom, or there is an hope, or there is opportunity for them to start something? What would be your advice?
Tourism at any given point in history has always been an epitome of how people detox. So whether it's from the stress of life, whether it's from the stress of a long week at work, whether it's from the stress of a pandemic like we've got now in Corona or COVID-19, people would always want to tap out. So tourism always play a very critical role in how people rekindle or get the energy back to be able to survive the advance of what life brings to us. It plays a very key role in our lives, regardless of the conditions that persist at the time. And in my opinion, COVID-19 does actually present a very different opportunity for people in the tourism industry to relook at how they can innovatively transform the sector to benefit from the advance of COVID. I went through a few of the submissions for the Youth Innovation Challenge, and there were people that were actually thinking of doing virtual reality tourism and stuff to get people to still unwind, get to go to the places that they couldn't have physically gone to virtually, to experience what they couldn't physically experience in different locations and different geographies. And these opportunities that COVID has brought about has forced innovation. It has forced us to think beyond the normal paradigm of how we do business. And if those who are very creative enough, those who are very innovative, those who are shifting from the norms of how we do business in the tourism industry stand to gain a lot more given the current times than the old ways of implementing tourism adventures or objectives. And for me, I see tourism in these times as being a key driver of how we would get past this pandemic and get into the new dispensation post the pandemic. And it's all tantamount to how the person who is trying to derive or to put a business model together positions themselves and seizes this as a gap or an opportunity to reinvent what they were doing pre-pandemic, within the pandemic, and post-pandemic to benefit from what the world has brought to us. And I do strongly believe that there will be more drastic changes post-COVID-19. There'll be other economic or social or worldwide events that might trigger a different change to how we see tourism or how we benefit from tourism or how we execute tourism imperatives. And it's, for me, it's about the adaptability which I spoke about. It's about being innovative. It's about being more sensitive to the events of the day and seeing how you capture the gaps that every scenario brings into the life of the young entrepreneur. And if you see that and you capitalize on that, you always come out on the other end as a successful businessman. And tourism is a business. Just make it work, seize the opportunity, and create avenues for you to generate the right outcomes that you need. So yes, it's still very relevant in the current times. It will be, and it will become more endemic in our lives as we even proceed beyond this COVID-19 scenario.
Yes, Akwesi, now as we wrap up the conversation, last thing that you have to do here on the show is to tell us who you are and what you've been doing if you're not working. And anything that you want us to hear of you.
So just to start with, this is my unqualified opinion as an employee. I need to put it out there. And I think primarily my focus on this conference, my focus on tourism was primarily driven by my PhD thesis. So I'm a PhD candidate and my topic is more primarily focused on the future of work. And I tailored the concept to many industries. So that is what I presented to the conference. When I'm not a student, my full-time job, I'm a director of audit. I'm at Absa Bank based in South Africa, looking after the investment management portfolio and insurance, the rest of Africa. And that is what I primarily wake up to do every day. So it's a very multifaceted job that I've got. I'm a family man married with two kids. And when I'm not doing any of this stuff, luckily for me, I've got the privilege of playing golf as an amateur. And I'm still trying to perfect my golf game. So that is what I would normally, ordinarily do when I'm not talking to Kojo about tourism stuff or in the classroom trying to finish my thesis or do my day-to-day work as a director of audit in Absa Bank. So in a nutshell, that's me.
Akwesi, thanks so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the invitation.